Hi, I'm Hinal Rajani. Welcome to the Useful Evaluation Podcast. I'm here with my partner in evaluation crime, Adam Fennell.
And as always, we're here to ask, how can evaluation change the world?
This week, we got to speak with Carolyn Holdsworth of Pillar Nonprofit here in London.
I loved getting a chance to talk to Carolyn because Carolyn's the kind of person that you can sit around with for hours and just bat ideas around. She's really focused on trying to figure out the best way to make an impact in the roles that she's in. And she's got so many different experiences to share from. She talks about singing. She talks about starting her own business. She talks about her work in the nonprofit sector. And it was a great chat.
Sounds like you two could have talked all day. I love how you got right in there, started talking at the beginning about what does impact even mean? And from there, you got deeper and deeper.
Well, and that's actually been the hallmark of a lot of conversations I've had with Carolyn, is really trying to drive at what that purpose is. Can we actually articulate what we're trying to do in the world? And I love the fact that she brings that into the conversation.
I love one thing that she said that really stood out for me. Goal setting has got a bad rap.
Yeah, she did. She talked about goals for sure. She talked about things like giving up TV. And it was just neat to hear how somebody can kind of bridge the goal setting that they're doing in their real life to the goal setting that they may be doing or not doing in their work lives. And I think we can get a lot of insight from listening to what Carolyn has to say.
And getting things done.
Yes.
Like me, she's a aficionado or fanatic of David Allen's Getting Things Done.
That's the email you keep sending me to remind me to read book. Yes.
Have you read it yet?
I haven't quite got it done.
Okay. Well, we can work on that. Well, for now, let's hand over to Carolyn.
Carolyn.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Who are you?
My name's Carolyn. I am, do you need my last name?
Sure.
My name is Carolyn Holdsworth.
Much nicer with my last name.
I'm the executive assistant at Pillar Nonprofit Network, and I'm also the owner artist at MeNC, which is how to describe MeNC. I don't really have my pitch down, but I create artwork from photographs of different places in the city, and then I screen print that artwork onto all kinds of different things.
And what is Pillar?
Pillar. There's another pitch I don't have down. Pillar. Pillar is basically a nonprofit that supports people who are looking to have a positive community impact. So whether that's individuals who have started up social enterprises or nonprofits in the city. And the reason Pillar really got started is to bring together the different sectors. So trying to get everybody working together toward this positive community impact.
I should have asked a different question. I feel like the question should have been, what is Pillar to you?
Pillar has been actually really, it was very accidental, but I landed this role when I first moved back to London, and it turned out to be really fortuitous because it's an organization that's so deeply rooted in community. I mean, I'm saying the words positive community impact, but that's exactly where they're born from, is reaching people on the periphery and making sure that they're part of the community and looking at what we can do better and looking at how people can be more engaged and really shine. And what an incredible place to be involved in when you're coming back to a city and getting to know it again and, trying to immerse yourself. Yeah, that's, I think, for me, it's just opened my eyes to a whole new London.
So we're going to talk about evaluation at some point in this conversation, but you say the words positive impact, positive community impact, and that word comes up a lot in conversations about evaluation. It comes up a lot in the nonprofit sector. What does it mean?
Yeah, exactly. So when I think about positive impact, I think about just moving the needle. So if you're neutral, just moving the needle toward whatever it is that you're trying to achieve for your community. And I think that in this case, in Pillar's case, it's very much about being inclusive. And like I said, reaching people on the margins and making sure they're feeling part of the community and helping people to thrive, helping nonprofits to thrive. And so to me, a positive community impact for Pillar would be to move the needle further in that direction.
How do you understand positive impact in relation to MeNC?
Positive impact related to MeNC, I think I'm still working that out. So It's actually, you know, the values are really similar to Pillar. I'm conscious that a lot of people are in the periphery, they are on the outside, they're not in feeling included in the communities. So I know that a positive impact for me would be about somehow connecting with people, helping them to feel like, I don't know, to feel like they're part of something. So there's an interesting thing that happens with my business where people recognize the places on my t-shirts, and we have this moment of, oh my God, I used to go there all the time, or, you know, that's my regular Thursday night place, or I spend so much time in that park. And you hear story after story, not just the places on my shirt, then also just their favorite places in London. And so it's something around that. It's something around that connection piece. But stay tuned.
It's interesting. You're making me think about how we understand. Well, actually, I should go back and say that the inclusion of the word positive in front of impact, I think, is important, because often the word impact just shows up on its own.
Yeah.
And when you don't modify it, you tend to just assume that it's positive. And
yeah.
There's, I think, at least a conversation to be had about whether the impact that our organizations are making is positive.
Yeah.
And so you just have me thinking in the relationship between the business positive impact and the nonprofit positive impact, do we always assume that one is making a positive impact versus the other? And which one might you have to work harder to prove is having a positive impact?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I think that's part of the problem is we're assuming. And, you know, because something would be positive for me, Carolyn, doesn't necessarily mean that it would be positive for you or positive for people who have led very different lives. Part of what I'm interested in is this idea of doing something good for someone, doing something that will make somebody feel good, and what that actually looks like and how you can figure that out on a broader scale, because it's so different for everybody. And the word impact has this really funny connotation in my mind, because that's, you know, something I talk about in my relationships. You know, this had a negative impact me. This had on me. This had a positive impact on me. And it's what I'm left with is it's so different for everybody. You know, something that will be totally neutral to one person will really have a deep impact that's perhaps not the most positive on another. So it's a bit of a tough thing to figure out.
Well, I think it actually makes sense to start at the end in some ways, mm-hmm. with the word impact when we're talking about evaluation. Ostensibly, we're trying to evaluate our impact, I suppose, whenever we go out to do this work in either the nonprofit sector or in the for-profit sector or wherever we're doing it in our daily lives. And so I guess I'm interested in, when did you first hear the word evaluation? When did you first interact with the word evaluation?
I think probably in school, but in the you know, being evaluated on all kinds of different things through tests. But I think in the context, in my adult life, really being here at Pillars, the first time I talked at any great length or heard very much about evaluation. But I think I had been doing evaluation in lots of different ways throughout my life, which is really interesting to look back on now.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I came across, or that I can remember the first time I was really doing any kind of intentional evaluating, was probably around finance management. So I remember taking this workshop, I don't know, I was in my 20s, I think, about how to better manage my money, which took me a really long time to catch on to that. But this workshop was the start, and they did sort of values-based work. So they talked about drawing a circle and drawing a point on the outside of the circle for each of your values, and then starting in the middle, kind of assessing if the middle was no time at all and the outside was lots of time and attention, how much time and attention are you giving to each of your values? And you kind of have a sense of where you are, and if something is important to you and you're not paying attention to it, why not? So it was definitely an exercise in evaluation, and I've done a lot of that work since then, which I wouldn't have considered at the time to be evaluation, but of course I think it is, to understand, you know, why am I behaving the way I'm behaving? What impact is it having? I think any time you're going back to where am I trying to get to and how effectively am I getting there, that's evaluation.
So there's been a bit of an arc of what evaluation means to you, I suppose.
Sure.
If you go back to that first interaction in the classroom, how did it feel?
Very stressful. because you were trying to reach not a goal that I'd set for myself, but to reach a standard, you know, so not having set those goals for myself and trying to meet somebody else's standard was quite a stressful situation.
Do you see that show up in your work in the nonprofit sector?
Yeah, I mean, I am a little bit far removed because there's a lot of people, you know, a lot of people at my organization are dealing with finding grant money and funders. And I think I see it show up there. There's certain milestones they have to meet. In my own work, which is really support work to my team, I mean, I suppose I'm always working towards other people's deadlines and other people's standards, but not in that same stressful way. You know, it's more of in a supportive way. So I don't come across it as much. Unless, of course, you look at trying to implement new systems into your workplace. There are a lot of expectations, I think, about how things typically run. And if you're looking to try and implement something new, you would come up against, well, this is how we typically do it. This is why we typically do it that way. Is your approach going to meet these needs? And or if it's going to be different, then what is it going to achieve? So there certainly are some pressures in that regard. But yeah, I suppose it's a little more evolved than being assessed in a standardized test. But
well, it sounds like there's some sort of difference between, well, being evaluated based on someone else's standard and being involved in creating the standard in which you are evaluated.
Right.
And so what you're describing to me in your work now is at least some sort of involvement in the setting of the standards and some control over of what success looks like. If you think sort of in comparison to what evaluation meant to you at the beginning and what it means now, how do you think that meaning has evolved over time?
I think it's just become a lot clearer that there's a purpose to it. You know, so evaluation is not just for the sake of evaluation, at least not ideally. I think it's really to help you to get to where you're trying to go. So I was watching a video of our founder, Willie Benklooster, who was talking about, this is of Pillar, who was talking about when Pillar started. He was talking about the strategic planning process, and he said before we could do any planning at all, we needed to get really clear about where we were trying to get to, about what our dream was, about what our vision was, which is, of course, the whole point. If you're trying to get somewhere, evaluation is something that you can use to know that you're on the right track, to know that what you're doing is effective, to know that you're actually headed to where you think you're headed, or if you're not, to know that you need to change your goals, you know, change your North Star. Over the South Star instead. So I think for me, it's just become clear that it's something that's to benefit me, not to hold me in.
Somebody asked me the other day if maybe there's a part of evaluation practice that we have to unlearn in order to be able to learn to do it in a way that is perhaps more useful or more meaningful to us. And does that resonate?
Yeah, the first thing I thought about was that concept of Eddie Out. Has that come up yet?
No.
You know, this is Mark's analogy, which I really liked in one of his talks that he gave about evaluation. And it was the concept of eddying out was if you're paddling with a current, you're going along with that current, you're just fine. But if you need a break and you try to pull out to the side, that it's actually really, really difficult to stop the inertia of what you're doing and to... You had to fight the current to be able to get to the point where you can stop and rest. That's what, for some reason, I don't know what the connection is there, but that's what resonates for me, is that it's not a simple process. It's not, you know, I think a lot of people think of evaluation like, we'll just, you know, track these metrics and they'll tell us what to know. But I think if you're not putting the time and effort into it, if you're not struggling against the current, if you're not fighting for something, it's probably not going to be as true or as useful as it could be.
So this is Mark Langlois, a developmental evaluator who works in London primarily, works out of London primarily, and works across the country with a bunch of different community development projects. And I am familiar with Mark's eddying out concept. And I guess I'm wondering, have you experienced the eddy out in your work?
Oh my gosh, have I experienced? Yes. Resounding yes.
I know this to be true, of course.
Yes. I know, of course, leading question.
Yes.
Yeah. So at Pillar, we've had a real focus on evaluation this year with the impact evaluation or useful evaluation project. And it's been a struggle. And I think especially because I'm a person who likes to get really clear on ideas, so I find it hard to move forward unless I really understand the context and where I'm going, which I think makes me a good person to do evaluation because it naturally is interesting to me and it satisfies something in me where I'm like, ooh, I'm going to be so clear when this is done. But it's not always easy when you're in an organization and you're talking about 15 staff and you're an organization that has a governing board of directors who's, you know, helping to set the direction for the organization. So things are moving so fast at Pillar, then how do you stop and take the time that's required to really get clear on what it is you're trying to do? And I think people need different levels of clarity around that. So if they have kind of a general idea or they have a sense, they have a gut feeling about what's right and what's not, that's good enough. I like the idea of digging a little deeper than that. So that process, you know, I have a wonderfully supportive team and staff. And when I took an interest in this, along with a few other people on our team, there was a lot of encouragement to really dig into it and see where it took us. And there was a lot of room to do that. And I was really fortunate, but I can imagine that's not always the case because it takes a lot of time just to sit there and get clear on your ideas and articulate them, which is a whole other thing. You can understand something, but then putting it into words is completely different. So yes, I've experienced that.
So to take that pause, to take a breath in the midst of a rushing stream of work, like is present at Pillar, what did you do?
Well, we tried a few different things. I think I leaned a lot on other people, so it was really easy for me to get mired in, you know, we've pulled all of this data and this is how I think I can make sense of it. So I spent a lot of time trying to make sense of a lot of data. So one of the things we did was interviews with staff related to our strategic plan. So I had all this data from all of these mini interviews. And so first I tried to organize it. And then when I got overwhelmed, you know, I leaned on other people to help me sort through ideas and thoughts and wording. And that was very helpful. To have more than one person engaged in that kind of work. And I needed to check in really regularly with my executive director, and that really helped because she's kind of the beacon. So she helped to redirect if need be, or to refocus, or to push back, or she holds so much of the organization's history. So I leaned on her a lot as well. And of course, she was engaged in the process, but at the same time giving us room to really explore.
That buy-in at the executive director level, at the leadership level of the organization, seems like an important thing in ensuring that an evaluation can go where it needs to go and ask the questions that it needs to ask, because I guess it can be uncomfortable at times.
Yeah, absolutely. So it can be uncomfortable. It can take a lot of time. Not necessarily, but it can. And it can take a lot of effort. It can take full team engagement. So you're looking at a lot of staff time, potentially. I mean, I don't know how evaluation typically goes, but that was certainly our experience. So I think it's huge. And I think to have leadership that recognizes that there's potential for a concept or for a practice to really elevate the work of the organization and to give it a shot is pretty exceptional. And I think pretty necessary.
Do you think it worked?
Yeah, I don't know yet. So yes, I mean, so here's what's interesting to me. Definitely there is engagement in the work that we're doing and the actions that we have determined that we want to take. I mean, huge engagement. All of the staff feel like they were involved and like they were part of that process. And that's, I think that's tremendous. I think that's really important. As to whether we have a clear idea of how each of our actions is going to roll up to the impact we're trying to have or the result we're trying to have, that actually still feels a little unclear. So we're running into some issues where, you know, information is collected in different places, or people say, yep, I'm on board with this plan, but also I have these plans. So it's just such a change in the way we've been operating. It's hard to know yet whether it's worked. But I would say that it's given us some really interesting information, and it's given us a whole new level of engagement. And I think we're not there yet. You know, I think that if you ask me that question 6 months from now, I'll have a completely different answer. But it's definitely been an exciting process. Like, well, I've really enjoyed it. Miss Clarity over here. I'm like, ooh, what else can we evaluate? This is great.
Do you think it's just by accident that the evaluation, or the thinking about evaluation, is leading you down that road of looking for purpose? No,
I don't think it's an accident. I mean, it's, you know, you can put your head down and plug away for a really long time without really knowing what you were plugging away at or for. But I think when somebody says to you, look, there's a bigger purpose here, and you're actually, you're contributing to something really exciting, of course that motivates you to want to know more. And so what this process of evaluation has done was kind of, I already had rumblings of, I kind of know why we're doing what we're doing, but not totally. I don't have the full picture. So this process has just given me, and I think given the staff, permission to say, yeah, I don't fully get it. But when you understand each step and each action and why you're doing that action and how it's going to contribute to your vision or what you're trying to get to, it just gives you so much more direction, so much more inspiration. It's like lighting a fire, in my experience. I don't think it's an accident. I think it sort of generates this feeling of, I'm actually making a difference here in everything that I'm doing. I think it's very motivating.
In the case of Pillar and the work that you've been doing with them, it strikes me, knowing what I know about the situation, that there's a lot of information in the organization already. There's lots being captured. People have lots of insight. They have lots of spreadsheets. They have lots of survey data. They have lots of stuff. Is it fair to say that part of this journey has been about making sense of what the patterns are in the information that already is available?
I think so. I mean, I think if you talk to somebody different, they would say, oh yeah, Pillar's been evaluating for years and we've done a really good job of it. And, you know, here's what it has told us. For me, I know the data that we're capturing, but I didn't necessarily know how it all fit into the big picture. Or I certainly think we've been capturing a lot of information, and that information tells a story. And part of what we are figuring out how to do is how to interpret it. What does it tell us, really? I mean, but it's a lot for little tweaks. Like, okay, we get this many website visits per month. So even asking, like, is it unique visitors or not unique visitors? And is it unique visitors that have never been here before, or they came here because they saw a post on, like, that kind of stuff, you know, just digging deeper into what it actually says. And then once you figure out what it actually says, does it really matter? So is that part of what we're trying to get to, and does it contribute to what we're trying to achieve? And I think for Pillar, most of it, the answer is yes, but I personally am not always able to draw that line. And that could just be, you know, it could be that some people are able to, and it just hasn't trickled down to me, you know? So it could even just be an internal breakdown in communication about why we're tracking certain things and why it's important and how it rolls up.
With that example of the website, or a different one, I suppose, if it makes sense, can you sort of see the progression from, we're collecting this, we know what it means now when we look at this number, what it's telling us, and now this is the action we're going to take as a result of what we've asked of this statistic?
Can I see the progression? I can see the potential progression. I mean, I know that there have been, so for example, some social media stats. I know Lori Wainwright, who's the director of Innovation Works for Pillar, so she met with someone to go over our social media stats. And in doing that, discovered there were some things that were effective and some things that weren't. And so she's been monitoring that ever since and changed her approach to social media because of those stats. So I do see that happening. What I notice about that is she spoke to Jeff Evans, who's a social media coach. He lives in that world, and he was able to very quickly identify for her, look, at these are the stats that are kind of meaningless because they're not really telling you what you think they're telling you. These are the stats you want to focus on. So it's a scenario where we brought in somebody who really knows exactly what you want to measure and why. So that process went fairly quickly. If you're talking about stats that are maybe in an area that you're not as familiar with, you're a little more in the dark. So then the process of figuring out this is what we're measuring, this is what it tells us, and this is how it'll impact our actions is going to be a little slower. So I see it happening, but maybe not as fast as other things.
Have you encountered moments where you've, as you've gone through this process, you've said, wow, we just don't have that information. We really want to know this, but we just don't have anything that gives us any insight?
Yeah, I acknowledge at some point that I just don't have a lot of the information that some of my colleagues have. You know, I am a tremendous administrative support and I have lots of information, but also there's lots that I don't know. So there are for sure moments in team meetings or where we're up against, we're having an issue or we're trying to sort something out where I say, should we bring somebody in to help us with this? And inevitably somebody at the table says, we don't need to bring somebody in because I know I have this information, or, you know, I have this resource. Or, but definitely I am a fan of bringing in the experts, asking the experts, just asking the people who have information that will help you to get clearer. I mean, and help you to make informed decisions, because you can definitely do it. I think anybody can figure it out by trial and error, but it's a lot more work. So if there's people out there who know that world, why not bring them in?
Let's zoom back out a bit here. Let's go back to Carolyn and Carolyn's life. Do you have any processes in your personal life that you consider to be evaluation?
I do.
Do you?
I do.
Tell us about them.
Well, I journal, which I think is a super helpful process, especially for me, because I realized recently that I'm a person who internally processes a lot. So if I use an example, there could be something that made me really angry, but I didn't clock it. Almost like it didn't come to the forefront of my mind. It was just sort of there and it was passing by and I carried on with my day and didn't think about it again. And then it comes up 2 weeks later and it kind of passes by and I don't think about it. If I write it down, it just brings it to the front of my mind and it's evidence that it came up. And so if 2 weeks later, 2 days later, it comes up again, it's a repeating pattern that I can identify. So that's been important just from the perspective that, you know, I want to be better at expressing what I need as a person. And so, but if I'm not aware of it, then I have no hope of expressing it. So that's been a really useful tool for me. I also do a lot of goal setting, which is interesting that it's been getting such a crummy rap, but I really like it because I move quickly. So I often feel kind of like Pillar feels, you know, Pillar moves really fast. And so do I. I have a business of my own on top of a job. And so I move quick, and goals just help me to keep really focused on the things that I'm trying to achieve so that I don't try and do 70 things at once. I can't possibly focus on that. So I do a lot of tracking of my progress on goals. I've started to just focus on one at a time and not do, like, for a while I had a sheet of like 20 goals and I would check off whether I was achieving it or not. And that was very cumbersome and stressful. So now, you know, part of the evaluation that I'm doing is just focusing on one goal at a time and either accomplished it that day or I didn't, or I moved closer to it that day or I didn't. So just a really simple tracking of how it's moving.
What's an example of a goal, if you don't mind sharing?
I'm a good sharer. So this month I decided time is a real valuable resource for me, as you can imagine. And last year I had a very, very stressful year because I just found I didn't have time and I was fitting in my business in the in-between time, so at nights and on weekends, and it became too much. So this year I'm really trying to scale back, but what it means is that the time that I do spend on my business has to be pretty focused. So I was finding at night, I would just check right out and just watch TV, which isn't a problem once in a while, but for me, it became a perpetual thing. So I decided if I ever had any hope of achieving anything other than what I wanted to do in my business, like maybe read a book or, you know, I don't know, go for a walk once in a while or go to do yoga, any of the other goals that I had, I wouldn't have time to even get there if I didn't kick this TV habit. So that's this month. I just decided for the next month and or until it's not such an automatic habit anymore, I would stop watching TV.
So the goal is zero TV
for a month. Unless my husband wants to watch a movie or something, because that's different. as long as it wasn't instigated by me.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I was having a conversation with somebody recently about sort of the pros and cons of setting really lofty goals.
Yes.
So do I set a goal of doing this 100% of the time or 0% of the time, or do I take something more realistic and say, I'm going to cut this by 30% or I'm going to cut it by 50%. And just thinking about the psychological difference that it might make to take one approach or the other.
Yeah. And I have this idea that it would be so much nicer if I could just once in a while watch TV, and I start there, but I'm discovering that I really am an all or nothing person when it comes to breaking a habit. I need to start off pretty strict, and then hopefully later after there's less pull. It's just that habits have such pull behind them when you're first trying to break it. So I have a hard time going part way.
So can we apply that thinking in the organizational context?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a relationship there, a way to bring that practice into the organizational world?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Specific to evaluation or to anything?
I guess goal setting, maybe. That might be where the place to start.
Yeah, well, I suppose the takeaway for me is focus on a couple of things. Have you ever read David Allen's book? It's about time management, but it's also about how to organize yourself so that you're not keeping things in your head. You're not trying to track it all in your mind, because if you can get it out into a trusted system, those are so his words. You can tell I've read this book a couple times, but if you can get it out into a trusted system, you're not trying to hold it. Your mind's not trying to hold it and can focus on other things. So I read this book, Getting Things Done. That's what it's called. Anyway, I read this book and started following. It's almost cultish, the following he has. But what I love about it is very focused. So you can only put your energy into so many things at once, I think. You know, identify what's most important right now. And if along the way you decide, in fact, that's not as important as this thing that just came up, that's fine. Move that onto the list, take something off. But it's so conscious and it's so intentional. I think if there's a correlation to the business world, I mean, I think there's probably lots, but that very intentional choice about what to take on and what not to take on, I think you can just get so much done that way.
Do you think that is a harder thing to do in the charitable or nonprofit sector than it might be to do in the business world?
Probably, because it's so related to funding. You know, and that's a reality for sure. But if you at the very least had a sense of, okay, these are the things we have on our plate, these are the funding opportunities that have come up, and these would be the things we'd need to accomplish for that funding opportunity. Okay, so either we need to take 10 of those other things off our plate, or we need to find another way to do them. So I'm not saying it's an easy task. It's certainly not. Certainly not. She said with emphasis. But I think there is some value in just that process of being conscious about it and intentional about it. Sometimes at Pillar, it feels like every week it's like we have this new funding opportunity and we're taking on this project. And so I love the work that we're doing, which is really to try and get more focused about what we take on. But at the same time, what a beast, you know, like how do you can make anything fit somehow into the thing that you're trying to achieve, right? There's so many things you could do to achieve it, but I still think it's important to pick and choose. Otherwise, you end up with capacity issues and you're doing many things, but none of those things as well as you would like because you have limited resources and time. So yeah, it's a pickle, but it's something that Pillar, I think, has managed really well. Like, it's an exceptional team. But yeah, I personally think that any organization could benefit just from doing the bit of work that it takes to really get clear on what your current workload is, really, what your current focus is, and looking carefully before you take other things on.
As Pillar goes through that process, what stresses are you seeing in the organization as it tries to find its way to this place of focus?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of, there's different personalities which play different roles. So I think for people who are like me, where they really thrive on that clear way forward, when they start to hear about things that are being taken on or things that, you know, are new, there's that tension of, okay, so how does that apply to this plan that we just came up with? Where does that live? And where does it fit? And how do I figure that out? So there's that's a tension that I notice for sure. I think there's also a tension between this desire to move forward and move quick, because to be fair, gosh, things happen fast, right, in the world. So there is a bit of responsibility to keep up with that. And we have some key people on our team who are just, those are your people. Like, if things are moving fast and you need to get things done, they're going to jump in and they're going to make it happen no matter what. But so then there's a tension with the people who are ready to, like, move forward and go. And the people who are back there going, hold on, we want to know where this fits first. So these are two different goals or two different mindsets. So how do you reconcile them?
How do you?
I don't know. It's a really good question. So we came up with a staff action plan that's across organizations. We used to do individual plans, but we decided to do a plan for the whole org, which I think has been moderately successful. I wouldn't say it was a huge success. I think we're still working out how that fits, because then when something new comes up, of course there's actions to go with it, or it has to fit in the plan somewhere, but it's not always evident where it does fit, and taking the time to have that conversation, it doesn't always happen. So it's like we've created this good tracking system, but how do you use it really in real life? Like, in your day-to-day, are you really going to go back at the action plan anytime something comes up and say, where does this fit? Maybe? I don't know. Wait, what was the question?
How do you navigate the, or resolve is the wrong word, maybe how do you hold the tension that comes from the two different reactions to the new thing coming up?
I honestly don't know if I know the answer to that. I mean, I think what we do really well is keep open communication about it. So I have lots of room to go into Michelle's office and say, I'm really confused about this. And she makes time for it. I mean, she makes time for everybody to have those conversations. So that is something I think that's so important. But how to reconcile this need to, like, move forward and stay on pace with what's happening and stand back and really, like, refocus and figure out, get clear on what it is exactly you're trying to do and what you need to do to get there. The only thing I can think of is dedicated time. But I think also we benefited a lot when we had facilitation. So there were pockets of our strategic planning process this year where it was facilitated, and pieces that weren't, and pieces where we sort of facilitated ourselves, which kind of pieces of that worked. But there's something about having somebody external hold up a mirror and say, look, this is what you're telling me. This is what I'm seeing. Let me help you organize this, or let me help you put this into a format that everybody in the room, regardless of your personalities or the way you like to work, can understand it and use it. I think there's a lot of benefit to that.
So if I'm sitting here, I'm maybe a smaller organization, I'm the only staff member, and I'm hearing the advice, I should have an external person come and help us work through something. Can I?
Yeah, well, so I've been there too. So with me and C, I went through a bit of a strategic planning day. And I did have somebody else there. It was actually my husband who supports my business in that way, in that strategic way. And it was challenging, but so important to have somebody else there, because even the ideas that were in my head, when I tried to say them out loud, they made very little sense. So I realized I had some more thinking to do. But there were also really good questions that were asked and challenges, you know, challenging my assumptions and challenging my opinions. And I think that's so valuable. And so that's a similar thing. And I didn't have to pay for that coaching session because I have limited resources. I mean, that's always a thing too. But even just finding someone who you trust, someone who you feel comfortable enough to be challenged by them, someone who's comfortable enough challenging you, it's that same mirror being held up to say, okay, this is what you thought you might be able to do. So let's really look at whether that makes sense. Yeah, I think it can be a really helpful process when you're talking evaluation.
Is that something you end up doing in your work in the executive assistant role as well?
Yeah. So I find myself trying to make sense of a lot of things and then checking those assumptions. And they're often wrong, to be honest. You know, I'll take some data and I'll try and I'm saying data. And what I mean is really, you know, if I asked three people, why are we doing this workshop? And they all gave me three different answers. I'm going to compile those answers and try and make sense of what they're telling me and capture everything, right? And then, you know, go to Michelle and say, this is what I think. She's like, uh-huh. Actually, there's some pieces that are missing that you don't know about. So included in your assumptions, you need to include this context for it to really be true, or as true as it can be. I do find I do a lot of that in my role. But that's also, you know, I'd say I think about this a lot. It's also naturally what I do. So I like to make sense of things. And I love when somebody says, actually, there's context you don't have. So put that in the mix. It's just something I really enjoy. So that process for me, although sometimes I will, like, it is sometimes frustrating because you just think, oh my gosh, I have all of this information. I have no idea what it means. The actual process of organizing it and trying to understand it is exciting to me. So I think, you know, especially if you tend that way, it can be a really fun process.
Yeah, I'm thinking about how to put this into a question, but I think I'm just going to say what I notice is there's this presence of other people in the analysis process.
Yeah.
And when you can bring that person, like your executive director, into the conversation and they can add something to your analysis that wouldn't have been there before,
right,
just sort of to me speaks to the value of broadening your analysis group. We so often sit in a room by ourselves and tear out our hair trying to figure out what it all means, and we have some resources right around us.
Exactly. So I'm dropping all kinds of names here, but these are good resources. Look them up. There's a guy named Paul Jarvis. He's got a podcast called Invisible Office Hours, and he also runs a number of courses. One of the things he's talked about a lot, which I really appreciated, is if you think you have a product, maybe an online course that people will like, until you've gone out and you've asked 50 people or 100 people or 150 people whether it's something that would be useful, or better yet, if 150 people have come to you saying, this is something I really want, that's the time to go offer that product. So I do think there's something that happens where there are some assumptions that are made about what's needed. And that ties in, I think, to this somehow, right? Because I think in evaluation, we were talking about testing our assumptions, and I think that's all he's talking about too, is we think, oh, this will be a great product, and then it flops. Why not try to focus your work in the places where you know there's a need, and there's evidence that there's a need?
Yeah.
Yes.
I just have nothing more to add to that. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So before I let you go, a question. Imagine a world where people are doing more evaluation, perhaps more evaluation that is meaningful. What's happening in that world?
I think in that world, well, first of all, I think you'd be able to walk up to any person and say, hey, why are you doing that thing? And they would be able to answer you. And I also think that you would just find a lot of things getting done very effectively. maybe faster, maybe with less uphill climbing, you know, maybe in just more direct way, but mostly effective, you know, the things that people are doing, not just that those things are being done effectively, but also that they're effecting change, that they're actually having an impact that's not just positive. I would go beyond positive to say that's wanted and needed and that's actually going to make change.
So faster by slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Isn't that a quote from something?
We could just pretend we came up with it, but
okay.
I think you're right.
I like it.
Is there a downside? Is there a dark side?
Yeah, I mean, I think dark side could be to get too much in your head. Like sometimes I get into the process of trying to figure out why I'm doing something and it just gets so muddled. You start to really dive into something and you can get stuck, it's why it's important to have people with you to help you get out of that. So I think that is a potential downside, although ultimately maybe not a downside. But yeah, it's kind of like it can be sort of quicksandy. You know, there's an analogy coming to mind here. It's something about before you dive off a diving board. If you're doing sports or if you're running, there's so much mental preparation that you need to do before you actually do the thing. So before you dive off the board or run the race. Athletes spend a lot of time learning how to prepare for those moments, learning how to prepare before they move. And so I think that could be a downside, is it does take time. It does slow you down initially. But then when you're ready to jump, when you're ready to run, when you're ready to go, it happens quite quickly. And it's just so satisfying. Because I think the satisfaction isn't in doing the thing and getting it done. It's actually in the work that you're doing leading up to it. You know, because you know then, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the work that you're doing is going to have the result that you want. Or at least it has a really good chance.
That analogy makes me think about the way that I've come to play some sports, and I think I come to it by just doing it randomly.
Yeah,
I come to it with just that I want to jump off that thing. I think it's probably the water's deep enough. I'll be okay. Or I want to swing this club and hit this white ball and try and get it into a hole, and that's fun. And then I do it a few times, and I go, I don't really know how to do this. I don't really know how or why. And so I then hear in that preparation that you're speaking of, and it's motivated by a desire to be better at the thing that was fun.
Yeah. Actually, it's really interesting that we went down this road. When I was in university, I was studying to be a singer. And so part of the business that I have now is really returning to that more creative side of me and wanting more of that in my life again. And there was something that happened when I was a singer where I would go to do auditions and I'd be nervous. You know, auditions are like people are assessing you and deciding whether you're going to get into the thing that you want to do. It's stressful for me. But I really never developed a process to ready myself for that moment. So I would sing on stage or I would sing in an audition. You know, leading up to it, I would think, it'll be fine. It'll just work out. I'd have a little voice in the back of my head going, but what if these things go wrong? These often go wrong. And I'd say, no, it'll be fine. And the reality was, it was never fine. I would get up there, I'd botch the audition and think, geez, I really should have prepared for that better, but never developed that process for preparing for it that really had me ready to do the best that I could do. So I'm not saying I botched it. I sang fine, but I didn't excel. I knew that I wasn't singing as well as I could. And I think what was always missing was that prep piece and the process piece and what do I need to do to be ready for those moments.
Do you have a process now, like as you...
No, because the challenge is, I need help. So I haven't, through trial and error, been able to figure out what I need in those moments. So I actually need to find some help to figure out, because singing is a complicated thing, and I have some unique complications with my singing and speaking. So I need actually some support to figure out what I need in those moments.
I guess I reflect on my own experience singing and think that in some way it might actually be an example of the dark side of evaluation, as I was so focused on doing it right that I forgot to take joy in the process and stopped wanting to do it the way that I thought I had to do it. I just didn't let myself take joy, and so the impact wasn't there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like that's what you're saying.
Well,
it's not quite the same.
Well, I'll tell you, there's something really appealing to just jumping in and doing it. You know, it was really, it was much easier to say, it'll be fine. I'll just do the audition. And in the occasional moments where it did work out in my favor, I was on top of the world, you know. So it was much easier to do that. But I think I would have felt much more satisfied with the result, and probably also, you know, just with the process, if I knew that I had prepared myself to the best of my ability. And I knew that whatever happened in the audition, it was the best that I could do. I think that that would have been much more fulfilling than just jumping in and doing the best I could with what I had, which really wasn't much in terms of preparedness. And I was going on sheer talent at that point, sheer good looks.
And not to be too cute about this, but to think of that back in our organizational context, what is our responsibility as organizations to show up, given the seriousness of the work that we're doing, of our supposed belief in the social change that we want to create? What is our responsibility to show up with our absolute best?
Yeah.
And maybe not show up just with the best we got?
Yeah. Well, and I think that there was a thing in singing that, when you're talking about singing technique, that technique is for the times where it's not going well. Technique is the thing that helps you when you get stuck. And I think that it is possible, because there are incredible people in this world who just have instinct for this, and they just jump in and they do it and it turns out amazing and you think, wow, you know. But if those people are gone, then what happens? If they leave the organization, if they, you know, if for some reason they're not able to proceed in that way, like, then what do you do? What's the process that you can fall back on that you know is supporting you? I think that could be a danger. But in the meantime, you know, there's people out there just rocking it just because they have a gut feeling about what needs to happen and it's right. So I think there is something to be said for that too, and not, you know, how do you do evaluation and how do you do the work that's required to really have that foundation without holding people back who are ready to go and have the passion and the drive and the instinct for the work that needs to be done.
And I suppose in some ways that gut feeling is maybe one of the indicators that many of us rightly trust. And so maybe falling back on it sometimes isn't so bad.
Absolutely.
Well, it seems like a good place to end.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
All right. That's Carolyn. And there it is, another episode of the Useful Evaluation Podcast. If you want to continue the conversation, head over to our website, usefulevaluation.ca. Thanks to Lisa Pruden for editing this episode, to Hino Rajani for co-hosting, to the team at Pillar Nonprofit Network in London, Ontario for your support, and to the Ontario Ministry of Citizenship and Immigration for helping to make this work happen. Here's to another week of thinking about evaluation.